It's great to see you. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. Good to see you. Happy New Year, Rajesh.
Happy New Year. So I'm sitting in Las Vegas right now, and I'm here for the Consumer Electronics Show.
Ooh.
I think that's the one I emailed you about and asked if you were coming out here.
I've never had that experience. I don't know that it's relevant for my work, although maybe based on the conversations we've been having, maybe it's more relevant than I think, but it certainly sounds interesting. Is it fun?
It's pretty hectic and energetic, and the show officially kicks off today. So I haven't actually been over to see all the cars and tech and consumer electronics and 5G, but I have been in previous years, and I've always found it to be overwhelming but fun.
Overwhelming, energetic, fun. Yeah, I have to check it out one year.
We'll do it together. So today we're talking about, of course, our favorite topic, product-led growth, but in particular, magical experiences and product-led growth. So let's see if we could land this one.
I love that topic. This had come up in part because I was asking you about magical experiences that we've all had in our life around products as consumers, but what does that really mean in B2B? And I was throwing out a couple of examples. Maybe not surprisingly, the most powerful examples for me come from my childhood, like the first time I played Atari at Jed Golden's house. Jed, if you're out there, I don't know if you remember this. We were probably 8 years old, and I came to your house and we were playing baseball or something. And then we came inside and he said, I want to show you something. I got this new game. And he turned Atari on the TV. And I will never forget. I played this game once because it was not a popular game. It was called Circus. But the first time I played Atari was in Jed Golden's house playing Circus. It was two clowns jumping on a sort of a seesaw device and they pop balloons at the top. I don't think the clowns look like clowns. I don't think the balloons look like balloons. If you remember the graphics from those days. But why was that experience so memorable, so visceral with me now? And I know companies like Apple, companies that have a consumer, spend a lot of time thinking about that experience. I do think there's a version of that that's relevant for B2B. I don't think it's the same emotional connection, but it feels to me like there is something there. I've never quite tapped into it, I don't think, in my work.
Yeah, I think that I love that. And I was thinking about my own kind of magical experiences. And you're right that a lot of them come from that consumer world. But I think what's interesting about studying the consumer world and then applying it to B2B are the principles like you're talking about of like, maybe it's surprise and delight, maybe it's reduction of friction. Maybe it's anticipating my needs before I know they're my needs. Maybe it's easy fulfillment. But perhaps before we dive into that, let me share with you one magical experience that I always like reference and think about.
Great.
Which is the first time I experienced the Disney Magic Band. So if you're not familiar, you're a listener out there who's not familiar with the Disney Magic Band. It's like you plan a trip to Disney World in Florida. Maybe they have this as well in Disneyland in California, but Disney World in Florida is where I experienced it. And as your trip is booked, you receive in the mail this band that you wear. And what's interesting is you can use this band to access your hotel, to access the park, to pay for things, to have things that you paid for delivered to your hotel so you don't have to carry them around with you. And you can, if you've got a fast pass to get on a ride, everything is just stored on your band. Now, we may think about that as our phone today, but at the time it came out, it was truly magical. It was like, wow, I don't have to carry anything around with me except wear this band.
Right.
And what I love about it is that it was really a culmination of a physical experience with digital principles where you're like, you're traversing a physical park, but you are leveraging digital in an omnipresent way. And the way that Disney came up with it was they actually created a service blueprint of what it's like for a customer, somebody visiting the park, to go through the experience of being in the park. And they said, okay, well, you arrive at the airport and it looks like this and it's very busy. And then you want to board a shuttle bus and your luggage needs to get to your hotel. And okay, now you get to your hotel and you have to check in and then you have to find your room and then you have to access that room with a key. And then, okay, then you're going to the park the next morning and now there's a big queue at the park and now you have to pay for lunch or breakfast. They actually mapped out every interaction point where a customer was in a physical environment and thought about how digital might create a more magical experience. So I think as that is a backdrop, it's like, okay, well, what are the principles that we can take around personalization, frictionless experience, surprise and delight, and bring over to how we fulfill and delight B2B customers?
I love the example. I'm thinking about it because I went with my kids to Disney when they were young, and it's hard to travel with kids to begin with. My son sometimes is in a wheelchair, depending on how he's feeling. So that adds to travel complexity. And I do remember now that you're saying it, not just the band, but the experience, the simplicity of the experience, that I didn't wait to get my bags because Disney had them and they showed up in my room and you didn't check in at the hotel. And even the curiosity to ask, why do you check in a hotel?
Yeah.
Why do I have to pick up my bags? It's thought provoking. The other element for Disney for me, which I wonder about in terms of the process and the merging of digital, is also the anticipation that the brand has prepared me to have a magical experience and then it can fulfill that. Setting that expectation, I think that's a little bit of the Atari effect too, which is those weren't clowns. I don't remember the game exactly, but Atari's graphics, they were probably squares. Why did they feel like clowns to me instead of squares? It's because they told me it was going to be magical and then they made something, even if it weren't literal, that lived up to that promise. So Disney says you're going to have a magical experience and then they, from the moment you get there. So I do wonder, how do you put together the idea of brand promise and anticipation that pays off? And I do like the idea of living that experience and then translating, maybe even challenging all the assumptions of why do shuttle buses work the way they do? Why does check-in work the way they do? Can't you imagine something different?
Yeah. And I think in the B2B context, right, it's like, you know, you pick a space like mobility, and I'm a business traveler and I'm going from point A to point B. And as part of that, I need to perhaps have a rental car or an Uber or a bus or a train, or even I'm walking between things and I need to find it. Or, you know, you are needs telecommunication services and you're a small business or a medium-sized construction company. I think there's also something to be said for, as Disney, it's like, we understand there are lots of different consumer types and we're creating this platform that can be relevant to various segments or to even a personalized level. That same principle on the B2B side, we now are thinking around small, medium, large enterprise. We're thinking around verticals, right? We're like, okay, are you in healthcare? Are you in travel and hospitality? Are you in construction? Like the businesses we serve. So I think it probably begins with understanding how are we serving customers today and where are we meeting and exceeding those needs and where are we not? Right. And why does it work like that, right? Why does it work like I've wanted to buy a product and then I have to contact a salesperson to get my question answered about that product, right? Now I look at ChatGPT. Why can't I just like go in there and type in my question and like have it, like, why do I have to wait for that, right? Even simple things like that start to become, you know, magical.
So we have a number of those examples we're wrestling with now, especially for a company like IBM that is traditional B2B, sells relatively complex things, traditionally through the face-to-face channel, but you start asking questions about, well, why do you have to contact IBM for pricing? And sometimes, by the way, it goes the other way, not just self-service, but if I want to talk to a world's class expert on automation, why can't I talk to them right now? And those kinds of questions that you're starting in this more personal experience, and then you try to translate them to B2B, it's interesting how much time we're spending on challenging our assumptions as to why it is the way it is. And it is opening up possibilities. We're talking a lot about what, especially when you have more complicated software, what is a trial experience or a demo experience look like in 2023 that both has the best of the self-serve aspects, but part of the strength of IBM is thousands of world-class experts. How can you have access to them, not just to a piece of software?
That's right. That's right. And you and I have talked a little bit about this too, around the asynchronous nature of communication.
Yeah.
Right. Like oftentimes it's very tough to get, you know, two people on a live phone call to converse. But, you know, we've talked about, like, could experts be texting back and forth with, right? Like that kind of different. How do we track that? How do we make sure there's value in that? Because I feel like what digital allows us to do, and in fact requires us to do, is to figure out how to do this at scale. And I was thinking about another magical example. We have an amazing store kind of a few blocks from where I live in New York City, called Lester's. And very, very sadly, Lester's is closing. And they're going to actually build a pool inside of Lester's, which is this like mini department store, and Second Avenue and like 80th Street. And Lester's, though, is the kind of store where you walk into the store and they just have everything you need for like a tween or a teen. It's like perfectly curated. And you need a gift, no problem. You can guarantee that if you buy it at Lester's and you give it to someone, it is going to land and be a success. And moreover, they have like all of these like tailored programs for, is your kid going to camp? Does your kid do these sports? Great. We've got like pre-programmed modules of products that you need based on your specific needs. But, and Lester's got amazing customer service, but what Lester's never did or had was think about how do they translate that into a digital world? Mm. Because the competitive set is creating that at scale. And the same thing goes here. If we don't think about how do we enable access to our experts in an asynchronous way, we can guarantee somebody else is.
That's right. What's interesting about your examples is the blending of the digital and the brick and mortar in this case. It doesn't have to be one direction, which I hadn't thought about quite this way before, but you've sparked it for me, which is, it's interesting in the case of the work I do, that as much as we want to be self-serve and start your own trial and get your own pricing, IBM offers something more than that, because we also have a consulting part of our business that's about expertise. So if all we were competing on the basis of digital, we lose so much of our value. Yeah, but the blending of the digital and the human into one experience, and making that as easy and as seamless to the person on the other end of it, opens up so many more possibilities. So what does it feel like in a digital world to have access to an expert, not just to be on your own on self-service when you want the expert? On the other hand, when you just want to try, because so much of PLG is predicated on go have the experience of the product. But what if the product isn't just the literal software in this case, but it's the human beings that surround that, or in your case, it's Lester customer service, but with the ease of digital experiences? How do you blend those, especially for businesses that fall somewhere in the middle of digital and traditional?
Yeah, and I think what I have come to believe is that, is the product data fabric, or is the product 5G, or is the product, you know, fixed wireless, or is the product the entire experience.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we know today when you shop at Nike, you are not buying a shoe. You are buying the entirety of the experience. What it's like to shop in a physical store, what it's like to browse that app, what it's like to be part of the Run Club. We need to help to reframe that it's the end-to-end journey that a customer has with us that results in the magic, right? Yeah. What was it like to learn about the product the first time? And by the way, when I need pricing, I might just originally just need to know a ballpark, right? Like, I don't need final pricing. I just need to know, okay, it's between $1 and $3, right? And then I was, oh, okay, well, this is actually something that I could budget for. So why don't I start to learn a little bit more and talk to some, maybe that's a way of getting, and I think that another example of a complex area that did this really well was walk-in urgent care. So one of the first walk-in urgent care companies was co-founded by the CEO of Columbia HCA when he sold that hospital chain. And it was called Solantic, and now it's called CareSpot. And one of the big things that Solantic did at the very beginning when they started standing up walk-in urgent care in Florida, which then became a model for the rest of the country, is they actually started with a Starbucks menu board above the check-in desk that said one procedure, two procedure, three procedure, other, and had pricing on the right-hand column. And so, like, you know, of course, it wasn't that price, but it gave people some comfort that, like, they could access healthcare and there was going to be a certain price around it. And that was setting an expectation.
That makes sense. I could see in that case, sometimes people saying, I want the price because they need the price. But I could also see in that case, a promise of transparency. Even if we end up doing a different procedure and the price is different, you know, when you walk in, the experience from the moment you walk in is we're a transparent company.
That's right. And I would say that also you may need a price later in the journey, but at the beginning, you just want to understand, like, is this Louis Vuitton or is this like Zara, right? Like, which one am I shopping in here?
Yeah. I want the discount medical, please. Well, you know, I invited you to come out to Westchester, or next week we're doing this in our Manhattan office, but we're trying something that's different for us. In of itself, I don't think it's wildly innovative, but for us, it's a big step forward, which is for our marketing campaigns, all of our creative, all of our experiences, digital and physical, events and web pages and media and sales scripts, all of our performance data up on the wall. We thought it was really important to do it physically, even though we have digital versions of it. And we have our campaign team then stand in front of the wall with our sales teams, with our technical teams. And the experience, because we've done this twice so far, of thinking about that end-to-end experience, going back to your Disney story, it's sort of the equivalent of let's walk through it.
Yes.
Not is the website good, separate question from how's the media, separate question from how's the sales, the entire experience. And I will tell you, it was a painful first and second version. Not because it wasn't a great exercise and there was great energy. It didn't feel like the experience we'd set out to create when we saw it holistically. So what an opportunity for us to take those principles you're laying out and walk through it. And every step, challenge ourselves to say, but why? What's the assumption that we made us feel like that had to be a step in the process, or this asset was required, or why did you put pricing there? Why is that the first time sales was available? I found it so eye-opening that we're going to do 8 more of them in the next 2 weeks. And it's going to become a new way of working for us. It caught the attention of our sales leaders and marketing leaders.
That is so cool, Ari. I am so excited to hear that that's happening and that it's gotten traction. And, you know, I use the word to describe that type of work as service blueprint. And when I think about that, I'm thinking about visualizing the relationship between different components of the experience, whether that's people or software or physical or digital or process, but you're really trying to understand what that customer journey is and all the parts of it, even from the first time you hear about something. I love, love, love that way of thinking. And the way I have also been successful there is once that map is present, it's possible to circle the places where there's a lot of pain or friction,
yeah,
right? Or unmagical. And then what I love is we can then prioritize those pain points against our KPIs to say, hey, let's go and solve this one first because, you know, it's got big impact and it looks like a medium level of effort.
That's fantastic. Well, one, you should come by, but two, I'm going to steal your Disney story to help kick off. I'll give them a little bit of my Atari. So possibly, instead of Atari, I could go Sea Monkeys because I think Sea Monkeys has some of that same feel. But the Atari Sea Monkey, set the expectations. Don't be afraid to dream a little bit.
That's right.
And then the Disney sort of urgent care or medical care, think about that end-to-end experience. Lean into the friction points. Give yourself permission to reimagine. We could be a different marketing function in a couple of weeks when you check back in with us.
I love it. I love it. And then the one last thing I'll say, and I know we're coming to time here, is the idea of why I think it's so exciting is because when we create these magical experiences, people are immersed in the product, which is the experience, and they talk about it. Yes. And they say, wow, that was really incredible. And, you know, when I left Disney, I was like, you got to see what Disney's doing. Or when I left the healthcare, I was like, they have a Starbucks menu board around healthcare. And it becomes that viral loop that we talk about that brings more people to our brand.
I believe that. And take a company like IBM, take any traditional. If we can tap into the power of magical experiences, which you'll watch us do over the next few weeks, everyone can tap into it. Like the most conservative traditional companies in the world starting to workshop and fly people around the world to sit together and build magical experiences. Doesn't that mean we've entered a new era?
We've entered a new era. Well, my friend, I will see you in New York then very soon.
I will see you soon. Good to see you. Good to catch up. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.